Answer some tough questions tonight, but we're going to start out with an easy one. Who can tell me how many legs a horse has? Four legs. Okay, that was pretty easy. All right, now who can tell me if we call a horse's tail a leg, how many legs does a horse have? Four. Exactly. Very good. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what we call a horse's tail, it still only has four legs. How many of you heard about the three boys in a box? Some of you, being in the Christian education system, might have had contact with the book Understanding the Times, I'm not sure. But it talks about, in the introduction, three boys in a box. So imagine, if you would, there are three boys in a box, and they have never been in contact with the outside world. All they know is this box. We have three of them here. And one day, one of the boys, he decides he wants to know what is in his box. And so he gets his calculator out, he gets his ruler, he gets his piece of paper out, and he goes around and he figures out what true reality is. This is the world. He lays it all out, he's got it. He goes, he's pretty excited. He goes to boy number two and he says, "This is it. This is my world." And boy number two looks at it and he goes, "Well, I'm not sure about that. You see, this is the way I see the box." And he gets his piece of paper out and he goes, he draws it out. It's a little impressionistic, but it's the world to him. It's his reality. He's got it figured out. And they're arguing that boy number one thinks he has it figured out. Boy number two is sure he has it figured out. So they both take this to boy number three. And boy number three, he goes, "Well, to be quite honest, I have a little more information than you guys do." And he takes out of his back pocket a picture of the box, taken from outside the box that the maker of the box has given him. And it shows that both boy one and boy two are off in their views. Now, in this story, boy number one represents viewing reality solely through what you can see, through science. Boy number two would be looking only at human reason. And boy number three would be looking at something through a photograph. You know what that photograph represents? It represents the Bible. Boy number three is looking at something which does not change. He has the answer. He has the source. The creator of the world, the creator of the box, has given him something which he has in his hands, which gives him what the true reality is. So boy number two, he's looking at that photo which represents the Bible. All right. Now then, today, in our nation, in our country, we have a debate going on. That debate is between people who look solely to science, people who reason things out themselves, and people who say true reality, true truth, can only be determined from what we have in the Bible. The people who founded this country founded it on Christian principles. That's something which is lost in a lot of people today. But our Declaration of Independence plainly states, and this is the first paragraph, Declaration of Independence: "When in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another, and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them." So, our founding fathers looked to the laws of nature and of nature's God to determine whether or not we had a right to separate ourselves from England. Now, what is the law of nature and of nature's God? John Quincy Adams, the sixth president of the United States, declared, "The laws of nature and of nature's God, of course, presupposes the existence of a God, the moral ruler of the universe, and a rule of right and wrong, of just and unjust, binding upon man, preceding all institutions of human society and government." Now let's break that down. The laws of nature and of nature's God, of course, presupposes, one, the existence of God, two, the moral ruler of the universe, and three, a rule of right and wrong, just and unjust, binding upon man and preceding all institutions of human society and government. So what's that saying? That's saying that first comes God, the Bible, and the rules set forth therein. Second comes the government of the United States. So the government of the United States gets its authority from God. That's where we get our rights. We are under biblical principles. James Madison, fourth president of the United States, who's often called the father of the Constitution, he once said, "We have staked the whole future of American civilization not upon the power of government, far from it. We have staked the future of all our political institutions upon the capacity of each and all of us to govern ourselves, to control ourselves, to sustain ourselves according to the Ten Commandments of God." Did he say according to government? Did he say according to welfare? Did he say according to tax breaks? Did he say according to anything else? No, he said according to the Ten Commandments of God. That's what our nation was founded upon. That's where we get our true reality. That's where our founders got their true reality. That's where they found truth. And that truth does not change. And that is very important. Now, today, we have a big debate between boy one, boy two, and boy three over marriage. What is marriage? And I've gotten the skeleton for this talk from a debate, which was between Al Mohler, who is the president of Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, and my constitutional law professor from the University of Louisville, who happened to be a homosexual. And unfortunately, I was being taught by the homosexual, not by Al Mohler. But the first thing we're going to look at is an argument which is brought up by Christians, and then we're going to look at how the homosexuals respond. The issue is children. And I'm going to use the right side of the board for those on the right and the left side of the board for those on the left. So, what do we say? We should not have homosexuality recognized and approved for marriage because, one, they can't have children. So, one, can't have children. And two, because it would harm children to be raised by homosexuals. Okay, now how do the homosexuals respond to that? Well, first, they say, number one, there is no harm. There is no harm to raising homosexuals raising children. Now, what gets very slippery is that they don't have boy number three's photograph to determine what true reality is. And so they determine reality by their own reason. So how do they define harm? It's not how we define harm, I guarantee you. Now, the statistics would show us, research has shown that approximately, if a parent is raising homosexual children, if you have homosexual parents raising children, those children are about 4 to 10 times more likely to become homosexuals themselves. Now, the homosexual is not going to have a problem with that. He's going to say, that's not harm. But what does the Bible tell us homosexuality is? It's sin. That's exactly right. And what is the wages of sin? Death. That's correct. And what do statistics tell us about the homosexual lifestyle? It tells us that it leads to death. The Center of Disease Control has looked at the death rates of homosexuals and the death rates of non-homosexuals. And they found out that the life expectancy of the homosexual couple, not couple, homosexuals, living out there is approximately 20 times less than the rest of the population. So their life expectancy is 20 years shorter than the rest of the population. And why is that? That's because of disease. We have the big disease, of course, is AIDS with the homosexuals. And the Center for Disease Control has indicated, they looked at the numbers from 33 states between 2001 and 2004, and they found HIV incidence of 157,252 persons. And they found that 71% of those HIV cases were male, and that over half of those HIV cases were contracted because of sodomy. So that's HIV. Statistics in Canada were looking at syphilis. And they found that between 2002 and 2003, homosexual men, the cases of syphilis among homosexual men doubled. And so, is it a harm? Yes. Lowers the life expectancy, and also it leads to disease. And of course, we know as Christians that it is a harm spiritually because what? It's a sin. And what is the wages of sin? Wages of sin is death. Okay, so first they say there's no harm. Second, they say, well, it's true that homosexuals are raising children. However, if we look at this situation, we will find that the true harm to the children does not come from homosexuals raising children. The true harm comes from not giving those parents the same benefits that we give opposite gendered parents. So the harm isn't from the homosexuals. The harm is from us withholding the benefits that these people in our society should equally deserve and should be extended. And so they say that the harm comes from not being able to get married, too. So the harm equals no marriage. Okay, now if we're looking at this from a Christian perspective, though, who is the person who is placing the children in what we call harm over here? Is it us by not declaring the marriage, not declaring their relationship marriage? No, we're not placing them in that harmful situation. We're not taking 20 years off their lifespan. We're not placing them in a greater risk of becoming homosexuals and contracting all these diseases. We're not causing them to enter into a sinful lifestyle. So, who is placing them in the harm? It's not us, it's them. Now then, the next one is a doozy. The third reason why they say that this children isn't an issue is because, number three, no law that you have to have children. We point out children all the time. We're constantly trotting out this argument of children. But you know what? If you two were to get married today, children would not be an option at this point in your life, unless we're talking about Abraham and Sarah. We have a time in life when childbearing is not capable. And so they say marriage is not an issue. And you know what? If I'm convicted of a felon out here today, if I go out and I commit a felon myself, a terrible crime, I can still, later on, I get paroled, I get out, I get married, I can have children. You know what? That's probably a cell phone in my pocket that's causing a problem. You know what? If I am a sex offender, I can still get married, and I can be a parent of children. You know what? If I am a murderer, I can go out, if I get out of jail, get married, and I can be a parent of children. And so they say, children, you are saying that homosexuals can't get married and be a parent of children, and yet a convicted sex offender, a pedophile, a murderer, a felon can go out and they can get married and they can be a parent of children. So what do you say to that? Well, if you haven't thought about it, and I have to admit the first time I heard it, I was like, I'm not sure what I'd have to say to that. Well, let's map this out a little bit. I'm going to go ahead and erase what we have here so you can see this, because I don't want to get to the bottom of the board. You in the back probably can't see it. Well, let's say we have a male and a female living within the bounds of marriage. We'll say in the past maybe they were a felon, maybe they were a sex offender, maybe they were a pedophile, maybe they were even a murderer, and they can be a parent of a child. Now, then, let's say we have a male and a female. They're not inside the bounds of marriage. You know what? they can still parent children. They might be a felon, they might be a sex offender, they might be a pedophile, they might be a murderer. Let's look at the homosexuals. We have a male and we have a male. Now, they can't have a child within the relationship of themselves, but they can still parent a child. They might be a convicted felon, sex offender, a pedophile, or a murderer. And you know what? If we recognize their relationship as a marriage, we have a male, they have a male, and they're inside the bounds of what we have defined as marriage, they still might be a felon, a sex offender, a pedophile, or a murderer. And so, this is really a red herring. It's not an issue. What's the difference between this person, this is where we are right now, and right here? What's the difference between these two situations? We recognize this as a marriage. We do not recognize this as a marriage. And so what they've done is they've trotted out an issue that gets your emotions going, but it's really not an issue. The issue is not whether or not you are raising children and you've committed one of these heinous things. The issue is whether or not we are recognizing your relationship as a marriage, whether or not the government is going to recognize that, it's going to give you the benefits that accords, and the honor which that accords. And so it's a non-issue. If you guys have any questions tonight, or you want to say anything, or you want to ask anything, feel free to interrupt me. We're just talking tonight. It's a lesson. It's not a sermon. So, yes, sir. Yes, sir. That could be. It could be. Yep. Sometimes we get ourselves in trouble when we open our mouths, don't we? All right, the next big argument that we as Christians like to use that is going to be something which we're not going to be able to use much longer, I don't believe, but which we can use now, is public opinion. Okay, and my handwriting is terrible, as you've already found out. All right, public opinion, 51%. Right now, you will hear conservatives, people in the church, and they'll say, problem with our country is the judiciary. The judiciary has taken this out of the hands of the democracy. They have gone apart from the law, and that's true, they have. And they have taken this away from the legislature, and that's true, they have. And this is not what the majority of Americans want, and that's true. But you know what? Might does not make right. And right now, the percentage of American people who view homosexuality as a sin, it's still majority. We still have 51%, but it is shrinking quickly. And the day will come when we do not have 51%. And then what are we going to say? The democracy says we should have homosexuals, and they should be allowed to marry. Does that make it right? No, it does not make it right. I was reading to you a moment ago the first paragraph of the Declaration of Independence. What does the second paragraph of the Declaration of Independence say? We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights. That's what our founding fathers said. They said there are certain things which God has told us are so. We have certain rights which God gives us and which no man or government should be able to take away from us. And so in one way, homosexuals right now, they're saying that, whoa, the majority of you folks cannot impose yourselves on our rights. We have a right to be married. Now, they're correct in that the majority of people, they do not determine what's right. They do not determine what is wrong. However, they are looking at things from boy number one and boy number two's perspective, human reason, and what they see around them. They're not looking at it from true reality, from a Christian worldview, from something which is not sinking sand, shifting sand, something which is concrete based on the Bible. And if we have that worldview, then we will know that true marriage is what the Bible says it is. God created Adam and Eve. Not Adam and Steve, or even Edna. And so, they're right. The majority does not determine what rights are. But they are wrong in saying that homosexuality
and homosexual marriage should be a right. Because if we have the proper perspective, what is truth, what is reality, that comes from the Bible, and the Bible says what marriage is. And so, if we call marriage a man and a man, what is marriage? Well, if we say a tail is a leg, how many legs does a horse have? That's four. And so, marriage is still between a man and a woman. And it might have take on a different meaning in society, but a true marriage is still between a man and a woman. Okay. Now, another argument that they use, and I'm not going to write this one down, they say, given the failure of so many marriages today, can't or don't loving same-sex couples raise children better than hard-pressed single parents? You know, it is sad what we have done to the institution of marriage. The divorce rate is high. Infidelity in marriage is high. We have a problem with the boat of marriage. There's a hole in the boat. It's leaking. Does that mean we should poke another hole in it? No. Just because we have a huge problem with marriage doesn't mean we should cause another problem to marriage. Just because people are getting divorced more than they should doesn't mean that we should run out and decide that two men in a relationship should be called marriage. Another argument that they like to trot out, aren't two loving homosexual partners, homosexual parents, better than one abusive parent? Well, first of all, just as an aside, the word loving is very interesting, I think. Aren't two loving homosexual parents better than one abusive parent? For those of you who are familiar with 1 Corinthians chapter 13, what is that? It's the love chapter. That's exactly right. And what does it say love is? Well, in 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verses 5 and 6, it says, love does not behave itself unseemly. It thinks no evil. It rejoices not in iniquity. It rejoices in the truth. And so, is that relationship loving? No. That relationship is anything but loving. But that's an aside. Aren't two, quote, loving homosexual parents better than one abusive parent? Granddad, would you rather that I steal your wallet or your car? I would agree with that very much. But if you had to pick, which would it be? Well, in that case, should we legalize stealing your wallet? Well, it's not as bad as stealing your car. So therefore, we should legalize it, right? Okay, so if we have two evils, we agree that an abusive parent is an evil thing. But that doesn't mean that we should legalize another thing which is evil, which might be less or more evil depending upon the relationship, depending upon the situation. Two evil things. If one thing is more evil than the other, that doesn't mean you legalize the lesser of the two evils. Just because it would be less evil for me to steal Granddad's wallet than his car doesn't mean we should legalize stealing Granddad's wallet. Okay. Now, another one that we like to say, that if we open up marriage and we say that marriage is no longer between a man and a woman, but it is now between a man and a man, right now it is between a man, male and female, if we say that it's now between a man and a man, or a man, or rather a female and a female, then what's to say that it's not something else? Well, my constitutional professor, he said, that is a red herring. And I happen to like red herring, but not in this argument. I like to eat it, that's what he said. But anyway, what's the same about these? They all involve two. Two, two, two. He said, if we broaden marriage to be a man and a man, and a female and a female, woman and a woman, does that mean that we're going to broaden it to something else? No, of course not. That's not what we're doing here. We still have two, two, and two. What we are doing is we are eliminating sexual discrimination. Right now, we are discriminating based on male and based on female. If I want to marry another man, you're discriminating based upon gender to say that I cannot marry another man. And so what he said was, no. Just because we broaden it to mean another man can marry a man or a woman can marry a woman does not mean that it can be something else. But you know what? It is just as much discriminating based upon gender as it is based upon number to say that we're going to limit it to two. So we have discrimination right now, according to him, based upon gender. Why is it not discrimination to say two and not three? It is. It's discrimination. You know what? It's discrimination to say human and not animal. It's discrimination to say adult. And so when we start opening the door, when our standard is no longer the Bible, when our reality and our truth is no longer concrete and it is based upon human logic and human reasoning and what we think is right and wrong, then you know what? The person in power is the one who determines how it's going to be. And he can determine anything. Another one they like to say is, you know what? God created us all. He created me. He created you. He created the homosexuals. Who are we to say what is right and what is wrong? Did he create the homosexual? Are they not a human? A member of the human race? Who are you to say that one of the members of God's creation is worth less than another one? Well, it's interesting how they can twist things around. If God created us all, including homosexuals, who are we to judge what is right and what is wrong? You know what? We are not to judge what is right and what is wrong. We are to abide by what God has judged is right and what God has judged is wrong. And God has plainly stated that homosexuality is a sin. Go back and read Romans chapter 1. Homosexuality is a sin. And so, are we to judge what is right and wrong? No. And that means that we're not to judge that homosexuality is right, because God has already judged that homosexuality is wrong. Did God create them? Yes. Did he create them as homosexuals? No, he did not. Did he create the murderer as a murderer? Did he create the alcoholic as an alcoholic? Now, that might be his temptation. That might be the thing he has to fight against in life. That might be his predisposition. But God has told us that he will not put something, a temptation in front of us, that he will not give us the power to overcome through his strength. All right. Is homosexuality, the question they asked my constitutional law professor in Alamoa, they said, is homosexuality and homosexual marriage an attack on certain faiths? My constitutional law professor, he stood up, he said, I will personally donate my time for any church which is ever forced to marry a homosexual couple. I believe that we should all be able to have our own personal beliefs. But I do not believe that those beliefs should be forced upon anyone. Well, is that true? Does he really believe that those beliefs should not be forced upon anyone? Isn't it just as much a belief being forced on someone to say that homosexual marriage should be recognized has to say that homosexual marriage should not be recognized, somebody's morality is going to be enforced. The only question is, whose? Are we going to have a basis built on the rock, built on the truth, built on that photograph the boy number three was looking at? Or is our foundation going to be human reason and human logic? And that brings us to the last point here. Tell me, what law does not have its basis in morality? Can any of you think of a law that does not have its basis somewhere, somehow, in morality? You know what that stoplight out there? That stoplight is a moral law. It's stating that it is immoral to run that light and to hit someone else's car, to put someone else's life in danger, and to injure someone else's property. What two commandments would that be? Thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal. There are no laws that do not, as their basis, somewhere along the line, have morality at their core. There is no such thing as taking your morals out of our laws. Don't enforce your morals. Don't push your morals on me. Somebody's morals are being enforced. The only question is, whose? One question they had down here, why not offer the benefits and privileges that we have to all citizens and let God, not government, be the final judge on what is moral? God will be the final judge on what is moral. And the question is, as I said before, whose morality will be enforced? So tonight, we see that there is a debate that is raging. And if we do not have our foundation based on the Bible, then the definition of marriage can shift anywhere. We are on shifting sand. The writer of Understanding the Times, in finishing his analogy with the three boys, he said that they still have a debate. And the debate right now is about whether there really was a maker of the box, whether such a maker would want to say anything to the boys, and whether they should correct their drawings according to the picture, the person who provided that photograph from outside the box. You know, to this very day, that debate continues, but boy number three can say with a smile that he knows how that debate will end. For one day, every knee will bow, and every tongue will confess that Jesus Christ is Lord. Hopefully today we will be standing up for what is right, and we will not be swayed by those who do not have their foundation built on the rock. Richardson?